You're listening to Legion of Substitute Podcasters, episode 20. Monsters do lead interesting lives, don't they? And this is Legion of Substitute Podcasters, episode 20, and I am Paul French, and this time I am Renovation Lad.
Renovation Lad?
Yeah,
it's, dear God.
Well, it's kind of renovation, kind of not, but you know, we're sort of tidying stuff up and moving stuff out and getting the baby room set up and all that kind of stuff, because, you know, we only have like 6 months. And,
oh, that's true.
Well, actually less than that. No, Paul, do the math. Yes, we've got 5 months. So
it was you, right? Just checking.
Oh, snap.
I'm sorry, Jan. Don't beat me. Craves pregnant woman.
Yeah.
Bashes fag in Atlanta. Oh, my God. No. Oh, Lordy. I am Darren Noel, and I am, MegaCon kid, because I'm going to MegaCon. Woohoo!
Woo!
Gonna have lots of fun. Gonna go see some heroes. Gonna go see some villains. Maybe be a villain at some point.
That seems likely.
Doesn't it, though? How much alcohol does it take? Anyway.
So there's some Legion connections there at MegaCon, are there not?
There are. George Perez is going to be there.
There you go.
Mark Waid is going to be there. And he is, of course, the writer, early writer of the Three Boot, and 5-year gap editor.
Yeah.
And Greg LaRocque is going to be there. He was an artist in the Legion during the Baxter run. And I'm looking forward to meeting him for the first time. I've not
That's awesome.
Met him yet. And I am going to get the Sensor Girl sketch from him, I've decided.
Nice.
I'm going to do that because his Sensor Girl probably rocks the boat, you know?
You know, now that I think about it, Wade's got a connection to all three versions because he did edit the 5 year later Legion. And then he wrote a few issues of the... Of the Jughead Legion.
Ah, well, there you go then. He's
and,
in all.
Yeah, and then, he's much like his creation Impulse, he's mm-hmm. got a tie to all versions.
You had to bring that back up, didn't
see,
you?
See how I did that?
Okay. So, I'll be in Orlando, and just so everyone knows who I am, I'll be wearing my rainbow necklace.
Outstanding.
So you can spot me. Most likely. As if the outfit wouldn't be enough of a giveaway. Hello. Anyway, how can you tell if I'm there? I'm the one not in polyester. Okay. Anyway. Oh. All right, let's move on.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get some listener feedback. I just want to, there's one that came to the email address at legionofsubstitutepodcasters@gmail.com. And this is from Andrew Pellerito, who is Black Scarf on the forums. And I just love this because what he says is, you know, you've listened to too many Legion of Subs podcasts when in your daily grind at work, you think the word joke after dealing with anything that might be sad or alarming. Thanks for a great cast.
God.
That's awesome.
is awesome. Hi, Andrew. How are you?
Choke is starting to take over.
Choke.
It's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
It is.
Let's see. and another thing is, I just want to point out, I really want to give a shout out to Lexarius, because he is like the foremost commenter on our website at legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com, and is always there with some great insights as to what's going on in the episodes. And there's one from last week's episode where he talked specifically about the X-Men, and actually someone else did a point by point, but we had talked about the League of Super Assassins, and we were talking about Nutrax's chair looking very much like
Professor
Metron.
X.
Yeah, well, like Metron at first, yeah. But then you'd mentioned Metron, and so basically what he said was that X-Men and Legion did a crossover by proxy. Of course, the Shi'ar Imperial Guard was basically Marvel's version of the Legion, and this sort of tied in from the early Cockrum days. But, you know, they were kind of showing up a lot around this same point of time. because this would have been as Jean Grey was becoming Phoenix and all that kind of stuff with the McCrane crystal, you know. Anyway,
yeah, the stuff that made sense, yeah.
Over in the Legion, they had the League of Super Assassins, and I'll go through. Actually, Little Connell also posted to the episode thread, and basically he pointed out sort of what the parallels were. So you had Block was basically Colossus, the Silver Slasher kind of stood in for Wolverine, and you gotta love that Wolverine. He's a chick.
As a chick.
Titania was Jean Grey. It's basically the red hair. Liaison, comparing to Cyclops. Miss Master to Storm. And New Tracks to Professor X. And but here's an interesting thing, is that Little Connell points out is, you know, basically isn't New Tracks just a futuristic 70s version of Professor X? It seems to me that the chair is just an updated hover chair that the X-Men ended up stealing for the X-Men animated series.
Yep.
So
that
so
was
there
my
we go.
Thought, so.
Yeah. Yeah, so... So Lexarius went a bit further into the, you know, and he mentioned this again and sort of made those similar parallels. And I had never noticed that before. So that was really kind of cool to find out. He says about Martian Manhunter, because we discussed him a couple of episodes ago. And what he says is John Ostrander and Tom Mandrake incorporated him in Superman's history in Martian Manhunter issue 20. And Matt had alluded to this in that episode. And this would have been in July 2000, was part one of the Revelation story arc. And basically, and this is a spoiler alert for this one, but what he says is that John was already around when Kal-El's ship landed in Smallville. He tracked the ship and made contact with the data files in it. So he got to know a lot about Krypton in the process. Eventually, he took not one, but two identities to watch young Clark with the purpose of evaluating and to help instill his ethics and moral compass. Once Superman revealed himself, John played the part of a holographic Jor-El to see if Superman would be willing to recreate Krypton on Earth or oppose said plan. Once Superman objected quite strongly to that, John revealed the ruse and himself both as the Martian Manhunter and one of the identities he took while in Smallville. It says on another track, remember the appearances of John in both the original and reboot Legion. And of course, we remember like back in one of the wedding issues, there was the big... Lightning Lad's wedding, right?
Yeah, and, it's either that one. Actually, I think it's the Duo Damsel Bouncing Boy.
You're right.
Or he's in the background.
Yeah, so you see him up in the background there. And then, of course, there was the, in the five-year gap continuity, and John was still around, although quite old and relatively frail. Mm-hmm. In the Jughead Legion, he's hinted to be RJ Brand. You know, and this was something that was never really followed up on, but, you know, there was, that was kind of the rumor that was around at the time. And, so that's from Lexarius. And then Little Connell had another comment just on the, when we got into Matthew's, crackpot theory, which may not be so crackpot. And he said, I'm intrigued with the idea of the Time Trapper being Lex Luthor. I can see that idea. But more to the point, I can see the Time Trapper as Alexander Luthor. Alexander Luthor probably has the motive. Superman is the cornerstone of the universe, and he hates Superman. It ties to the xenophobia. Alexander Luthor's insanity is his snobbery. He wants to see the world burn. And it ties to Superboy. Alexander Luthor knows how to manipulate Superboy. More to the point... Alexander Luthor has the power to manipulate time and space, and Lex Luthor doesn't have the power. But the only problem I have with that theory is that Alexander Luthor is dead, and as we know, when characters in comics die, that's it.
Well, he wasn't just killed. He was shot by the Joker after the acid attack.
Oh,
and then they found the body in 52, and there was an autopsy. So unless Alexander Luthor replaced his own body with another copy of Luthor,
why back in my day when superheroes used to die, they could come back from much worse than that,
and become the Spectre. We know, but sorry, but If that's the case, then I would find it intriguing as to how they're going to pull that off.
No,
I have to admit, Alexander Luthor, if he was alive, would be a very good candidate for time trapperdom.
Yeah, it's all very interesting, and of course there's that the whole idea of the hair that they're grabbing and how that's going to tie in. So you know, if nothing else, the fact that there is this much speculation and that there are this many different possible ideas tells me there's something very, very cool at work here. Mm-hmm. And
totally,
and that's always a lot of fun.
Yeah, I never even thought of a mystery of who is the time trapper. I just assume it's the time trapper.
Well, and you know, it's funny you say that, because remember everybody was like, in Final Crisis, they were like, "Oh, who is Libra?" And it's like, this is what you're trying to figure out, because I don't think it matters.
Yeah, I was one of the who is Libra people, because I just couldn't believe that they were taking that character from his one appearance and making him such a pivotal part of the story, to the point where he kills off Martian Manhunter. But we'll talk about Final Crisis later when I am up to my nipples in Grey Goose vodka. Anyway.
That's a mighty interesting hot tub you've got there, sir.
Don't you know? I'm not drinking so much as marinating. Anyway.
Oh, my. So, anyway, so there's... And
throw me to the frat boys. Anyway.
There you go. So just for the record, for those who are wondering where that appearance of the League of Super Assassins is, they were written by Jerry Conway and penciled by Joe Staton way back in Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes, issue number 253 and 254, and that was in July and August of 1979. Around the same time, over in the X-Men, they were stuck in a pinball machine fighting Arcade. That was the one where Colossus ended up becoming the proletariat.
Oh,
yeah. Mm. And what I always remember about that one, because that was back when Byrne and Claremont had only been on the book for a while, maybe about a year by that point, and they had also been working at the time on Iron Fist. So you had a lot of sort of crossover with Colleen Wing, Misty Knight, all that kind of stuff. So So there you go.
Misty Knight. Misty wow. Knight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Take me back to 1974, please.
And she was basically Foxy Brown.
Oh, totally. She was. She was Foxy Brown.
A couple of other things from the, just to follow up a bit further on a little, just a little bit more listener feedback, because we've been promising it for a while and
we've been slack about it.
Exactly. So here is some, and this is really cool. Glenn Clagmire,
giggity, giggity,
giggity, giggity. Indeed. He pointed out a few things, and he did, he did a little bit further on the Interlac stuff. That we were talking about, and he talked about the Bismol Stock Exchange had a couple of repeated references to Takron Galtos. You know, hey, a stock exchange with reference to jail. Oh my, art imitates life.
Yeah, don't you know?
but here's a couple of really cool things that he had on page 4. There was a Klein Motors sign, tying, of course, to artist George Klein, and one building actually had Plastino written on it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I'll go back and spot that.
Yeah, then. Absolutely. And so that's very cool. And he said, after getting cross-eyed bouncing from the spread to my Who's Who in the Legion cheat sheet, I gave up. And I can't blame him. And that was exactly why we didn't...
I don't blame you at all.
That was exactly why we didn't have it translated, because there was just so much stuff to cover in that, and the issue had only been out for a few days at that point, and we hadn't really had a chance to get much further.
I didn't have time to, like, you know, memorize it, unfortunately. Although I tried. Darn it, I tried.
Although that Bismol Stock Exchange, you know, we were reading that just straight off, and that's frightening that we're getting to that point with Interlac. Anyway, so one of the things that he had a few thoughts, and he enjoyed Matthew Elmsley's appearance on the show as well. He said, outside of the technical glitches, which we acknowledge, it was just we're not used to having that many people on the show, and the stream was bogged down. He said, I nominate him for Legion of Substitute Podcasters Auxiliary Membership. So there you go, Matthew. And in the meantime, Vizalad and AntennaLad can help you with the audio visual side of things. And he said another thing. He said various other thoughts. Earthman. I agree with Maddie's sentiment. Definitely not written up to potential. However, few of these types of characters ever are. And that's fair, because, I mean, basically, then they're just all too powerful, right?
Yeah.
He says, I'll give John's credit for just for upgrading him in Action Comics. But otherwise, these guys with the duplication powers always seem like they could be more formidable. See Duplicate Boy himself, in fact.
Uh-huh.
And then he says, for Wildfire, he said, I loved his confusion about the hair. Just refreshing to pick up a book with the Final Crisis tag on it and have a character within the page acknowledge when something isn't making sense.
Oh.
And this is where he coined the phrase Jarth. He says, I'm satisfied with what Johns did here. He says, I was actually hoping that the whole Garth and Elements body deal would be ignored. But he says, I guess that's kind of a cheat, more so than what was actually done. And I love this. He says, the next part he says is Infectious Lass. What? Wait, what? He says, yeah, she wasn't in the book, so why am I mentioning her? I got sick the night book 3 came out, so I must have run into her that day. Sick enough that I couldn't make it to the comic shop for a week, so I couldn't even come here all that time or listen to the episode until Friday.
Agonizing. Oh, torture. Torture. Ugh. And, oh, my gosh. Hopefully he's better now.
Exactly. Well, it seems that he was able to at least get out to the store and pick up the book, so that's a good thing.
That is a good thing.
Yeah. In other quick notes, Caleb seconds the vote for Kent Shakespeare's return. Yay. I don't think we will ever see Kent Shakespeare again.
Me either.
Though.
No, I don't think we're going to see him again.
And
maybe in an Elseworlds Legion title. Ooh.
Oh. I roll her last. Head go boom. Last remaining coherent thoughts. Yay, Super Baby. Congratulations, Paul. Thank you, I roll her last. And she says, a 2-hour, 47-minute long Legion episode. That's some classy nerdiness right there. Loved it. Classy nerdiness. That is our poll quote right there. She says, almost cried during the Mon-El bit. Maybe someday I'll figure out why continuity hates him. Yes. This is
us
great.
Us too. We'd like to know.
This is great. She says, yes, I'm convinced Legion continuity has become a sentient being who turned on his makers and killed one of Triplet Girl's bodies. I go rest now. Oh.
Did Grant Morrison write that? Oh, sorry.
Oh, man, that was awesome.
Where's my vodka, anyway?
Where's that Grey Goose?
Fetch the vodka.
Up to his nipples, folks. There you go.
Both of them.
There you go. let's see here. All right. So, anyway, we should probably get to the actual...
Well, I have two quick things, Paul.
Yes, please.
And these are non-Legion books, but if you get a chance and if you're at your comic book store, I haven't heard a lot of people talking about these books, so I want to give them a shout out. I picked up Batman and the Outsiders Special. It's a one-shot.
I did as well.
It's a really good one-shot. It just sets up the new team pretty darn well. And I liked the art. I thought it was very thematic that you have the bats flying through the whole book. But what I really loved about this book, really... is that all the ads were squished to the back. So it didn't interrupt your reading pleasure.
That's an interesting... I wonder if we're going to see that trend go any further. It's been done in magazines for a long time. You know, I'm a regular reader of both Macworld and MacLife, and they both cram all the ads in the back. And there's a big section of them, but I find I'm more apt to read them. Mm-hmm. Just because it's like, okay, well, I've read the whole magazine. Now I'll check this stuff out.
Now I'll check that stuff out,
yeah.
Exactly.
And as opposed to skipping it over because I'm trying to finish reading an article.
Mm-hmm.
So
and Peter Tomasi, thank you for writing Katana the way she should be written.
Absolutely.
I've been waiting for that for years, and it's like, you know, she's not dour without having a reason to be dour, you know, so... When she just comes off sounding like too much of a biatch, I have a problem with it. But
yeah, because she was never like that in the Mike W. Barr era.
No, yeah. She was very matter of fact and to the point, but she was never just...
There was a softer side
snipey.
Of her. Snipey.
She was never snipey, you know. So I think maybe they were trying to write her a little too cleverly and lost some of the actual character in that. So that was a great one. And also, I have completed Vixen, Return of the Lion, which is a great 5-issue about Vixen.
And this was, that was the one that was written by Willow Wilson, right?
Yes. Yeah. And it's got some great art in it. It's really not a part of the DC universe. We see very much of Africa and how that culture is in the DC universe. It very much mirrors our own, I'm assuming. But I really enjoyed this book just from the standpoint of, here's a character who was supposed to have a number one way back in 1970. What? Yeah. And she never got it because That's of right. the DC implosion. And she's finally gotten her first mini series here. Mm-hmm. So if you want to pick up the actual floppies, go do that. I think it's a nice story. It leaves the door open for more things later. If not, pick up the trade. I'm sure they're going to trade it because it is a beautiful story. And it's kind of a JLA story as well, but really it's Vixen's story.
Who was it that did the art for it?
Let me look here. Cafu is the artist.
Interesting.
I've never heard of Cafu before.
I've been liking a lot of G. Willow Wilson has actually written a couple of things over at Vertigo. She did the original graphic novel Cairo last year that I really enjoyed. And
she's doing Air, isn't
yeah.
she?
Yeah, and I've been digging that book. I'm a couple of issues behind, but I've really been enjoying that. And so it's interesting to see her writing some characters in the regular DCU. Just another example of those just little tiny bits of Vertigo crossover. You know, once they start letting all the writers share back and forth, that's where we start.
Yeah,
to see
it'll be fine. We get it. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. that's cool stuff. That's one I wanted to check out, but I think I missed the first couple of issues because I hadn't realized that she was the one who was writing it, and so I will be picking that trade up. Nice stuff.
Indeed.
And up now, we've got an interview that Rick Croxton did a couple of weeks back with friend of the show and comic store employee Chris Walsh. Take it away, Rick.
Hey, guys, this is Rick Croxton again, and I'm here today with
Christopher Walsh, employee at Bebop Comics, Prairie Village, Kansas. Good to be with you guys. I've written you a couple letters over time, and you read them on air. Very nice.
Well, I figured since I, in the area, I'd stop by and say, hey, and, we kind of do it there, find out what's going on in the shops with the Legion.
I can understand that. A lot going on with the Legion right now. So I've gotten to read number 50. I don't know if I want to say too much about it, because I don't know if you guys have all...
Well, Baron has talked about it a time or two, and he wasn't exactly that impressed.
They did a fair job of closing the story they were doing with the Universal Armageddon War, or whatever it was, with the virtual invaders. And they also, I think, dealt with the whole Dream Girl situation, which most of the Legion was a little confused about. I think even some readers might have thought that Brainy was a little flaky there, because it wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah, he's been known to kind of go crazy every so often. Now, you're pointing out to me another appearance of Legion that just came out.
Yes, the latest Legion, the Faces of Evil crossover, the first part of the Marvel Family Black Adam storyline drawn by Jerry Ordway. At the beginning of the book, they're still dealing with the finale from Light Kingdom Come, and all the young heroes have migrated to the kind of toward the evil side, towards God. And Alan Scott, the old Green Lantern, is not too thrilled with that and basically wants to throw everybody out. He even asks Hawkman to take a leave of absence, which Carter has a little temper tantrum about. The other members, the older members, Jay Garrick and Wildcat, tell him, not so fast, we can't just kick everybody out. It's our job to educate these guys and make them heroes. And they start going down the list of people, where they're at, and whether they're willing to join or not. And there's a single panel dealing with Tom Cower, Starboy, as he floats down into a graveyard and in his usual current flaky state says, oh, I'm in the wrong graveyard again, seeming very confused. And there's a little star next to his dialogue box, and that leads to a little caption box that says, to see what Tom Keller's secret mission is, be sure to pick up Legion of Three Worlds. So there's obviously going to be a tie-in, as you guys have suggested on air before, between whatever Tom's doing in these graveyards and what we're going to see in Legion of Three Worlds, which, by the way, number three will be coming out on February 4th. I already have the invoice for our store, so it'll be nice to get the third issue of that out.
Yeah, we might actually get to talk about that sometime. Now, the issue he's now talking about was Justice Society of America number 23.
Yep.
So that's, you know, what's going on with that one. So, was there anything else in Legion that you might want to say before we, you know, get back to the guys?
I just recently was able to pick up, as I told you right before this interview started, the Best of the Legion Outpost, which I'm enjoying reading. I'm hoping to get my hands on a copy of Legion Companion, which apparently is out of print. But a local bookstore has told me that they can hopefully have it to me in about a month or so. And you said that you've read them and enjoyed them. I think it's kind of funny to read them, the Best of the Legion Outpost, in retrospect. I'm always kind of trying to place when these interviews are taking place versus what period of the Legion I must have been reading at that point. It's a little off.
Yeah, most of them are done, I think it's like in the 70s, if I remember, because I've got like an actual number 10 that came out later on.
But, you know, right in the midst of the book is when Superboy finally becomes Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes.
Right.
That kind of happens, it seems like, right around the midlife of the Legion Outpost.
Yeah.
And at that point, they seem to start to lose steam a little. But if nothing else, it's really worth it to see a lot of the illustrations by Dave Cockrum, to read the interviews. I guess I'm really glad that Roy Thomas didn't have a longer stint as a writer than he did on it, because I really don't feel like, from the little I read from him, that he gets the Legion as well as, say, Paul Levitz.
Right.
Or Jeff Johns, for that matter.
Well, I mean, to me, Roy Thomas is more like a Golden Age comics character writer, you know, than he is more the future.
Well, he talks about how he's always been put on books, whether it's the Avengers for Marvel or All-Star Squadron for DC. And as you said, both of those kind of have heritage going back to the Golden Age. But I guess he was approached to do Legion based on the fact that he's done group books.
Exactly.
And that's fantastic, but if you don't know the Legion, which is a little more of a complex group society than any other comic book group that I'm aware of, then I think you're gonna slip a little if you don't have all your ducks in a row.
Oh, exactly. There's a lot of times where we've seen a few slips here and there in the story and in art.
I was a little shocked Francis Manapal does not do the art on the final issue of the new Legion series. I can't remember the name of the gentleman who does. He's a DC fill-in guy. He's fairly solid. But it makes me wonder what happened to Francis, because I really enjoyed his art on Legion, and I'm wondering what's going to happen there. I personally have the secret suspicion that Jim Lee is going to be the penciler on the new Adventure series once it kicks in, because he was here in Kansas City in 2007, and my wife and I were waiting to get an autograph, and he was drawing, sitting by all by himself, drawing a picture of Saturn Girl. And at first, she was fairly undistinguishable, you know, the blonde hair and a female figure. It could have been Supergirl, it could have been Power Girl, although there's some obvious assets that Power Girl had that weren't in the picture.
Okay.
When he drew the Saturn symbol on her chest, I knew immediately who the character was, and I was thinking, what is this about? Is he going to be doing some kind of who's who, or is he going to be doing a poster? And I can't help but wonder, his name's been on a few chat boards I've seen as a possible artist for the new Adventure series with Jeff Johns. So I'd be curious to see how that rolls out.
Yeah, I remember seeing him back at Planet Comic Con in 2007, you know, and that line was so long.
Oh, yeah.
A friend of mine, he was waiting in the line to have his Hush book signed. And I think he was in the line for like 2 hours. And the line never was ever, you know, it's always the same length. You know, you might be a different, you know, spot in line, but it stayed long. I mean, it looked like he'd be wore out at the end of the night.
We waited on one of those lines. This time was the second day of the convention that I went, and I was actually working, I believe, for the store. But I took a little time off, and we were just catching him after a lunch break, so we were like the only people around the table at all, and a couple of his I don't know that you want to call them bodyguards, a couple of his personnel were kind of keeping us back until he was ready to take a break from drawing. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I was lucky enough to watch him, to sit there and watch him sketch this out. And then when he drew the Saturn symbol, I lost my breath. I was just like, oh, he's drawing Saturn, girl. What's this about?
Might be a commission or something that had nothing to do with
it. It could have been.
But it would be nice if, you know, if he was. I mean,
he's one of the few. I wouldn't mind if Francis Manipal drew it for Jeff Johns, although, you know, my feeling about what's been said about Francis is that DC is not... are not super hyped about him as an artist, and I don't understand that. I think he's fairly solid.
Well, one last question before we go. Who do you think is going to be, or how do you think this new series is going to turn out?
We have one other customer who comes in here who's a diehard Legion fan, and his take on it is that the old Legion, the original Legion,
right,
that flowed from the original series into the Baxter run, will be the Legion, and they'll kind of randomly bring in some of the younger characters from these other Universal Legions to fill in for the characters who are deceased. I kind of don't like that idea. I'm kind of hoping he's right about who the Legion will be. I'm kind of hoping it will be the original. But I don't necessarily want to see these other people being fill-ins. If anything, I want to see a merged history. Get a final, you know, this is how the Legion really was formed. These are who the members are. I know Darren wants to see Chemical King come back. I wrote you guys a letter after, I think, the last podcast I heard, which was...
It was 16?
Probably number 16. It was released on the 26th of January, I believe.
Probably part two of the
Superman and the Legion.
Right, that was the last one.
And... I wrote you after that and said, you know, Darren keeps mentioning that's the one guy who never comes back, and I grant you, I don't follow the, I don't know what you guys call it, the reboot, Archie, whatever, Legion,
right,
very much. But the other character that never gets brought back, who died in service to the Legion, to me, is Kid Psycho.
True. He died in Crisis on Infinite Earths.
But he died, you know, serving as a member of the Legion.
Right.
And, you know, to my knowledge, they've never brought him back in any of the other reboot or three-boot or, you know. So I was wondering, you know, if they're going to restart things and have Chemical King, is Kid Sengo going to be around? Because he was an interesting character.
Yeah, that's a good deal, I'd say. I mean, that's something we haven't thought about. Because, I mean, he was kind of a reservist in the original. Because his powers, every time he used them, he would shorten his life.
Life, that's right.
So that's why they couldn't use it.
Well, yeah. And one other thing, if I can, is you know, I was able to catch the, of course, the Smallville episode. I did want to talk about seeing the Smallville episode, and I did have a customer who came in the next day and asked me if I noticed the similarity between the three Legion characters and the three main characters of the Harry Potter movies, and how the Lightning Rod character kind of seemed to be the same sidekicky, whiny thing that Ron is to Harry Potter. And unfortunately, I did notice that a little bit, but that notwithstanding, I thought that was very well done. I flipped out when I saw the flight ring because it looks exactly like the one my wife bought me for our anniversary. And the only weird thing about it was the effect of when they were following Clark when he ran away from them, and they were flying with their flight rings, and there was this huge jet engine sound. And I'm thinking, I never thought that the flight rings would make
any kind of noise at all.
Noise, much less like a jet engine as they descended. But I loved seeing the Persuader. My wife, who's not as familiar with the Legion as I am, for some reason, and I can kind of sort of see why, assumed the Persuader was actually Feral Lad for half a second because of the mask.
True.
It's because she's not very familiar with Persuader and all the Legion villains like I am, but I thought that was incredibly well done. I really enjoyed seeing them, and I enjoyed the whole episode more or less being about the Legion kind of getting the first law of the Legion, which is thou shalt not kill.
Exactly.
And learning that from Clark, despite the fact that Lightning Lad is disappointed that he doesn't fly and he doesn't wear his suit.
But no tights, no flight.
Yeah, no tights, no flying. Who is this guy? But, you know, what's really sound about the character, you know, about never killing, about never giving in, never giving up. And people have said to me that they've seen it and they had friends over to watch it with them who weren't as familiar with the Legion, and they ask, well, where are all these other characters you talk about? Because the Legion is so expansive. Mm-hmm. And I tend to think that this probably happened, if you wanted to place this in a continuity, it would have to take place very early, when there were probably not much more than three Legionnaires.
Well, from what we kind of noticed in 247, and what we talked about a few times, that Superboy, whenever he became a Legionnaire, we're thinking he became a Legionnaire after Supergirl, in a way, because of, you know, the amount of, you know, we think there's more than just the three that was in there. And, according, you know, they're really doing their version, the Smallville, doing their version of Adventure 247.
Right.
So you only have the three. So that you wouldn't have, like, Timberwolf or somebody else. But it was really cool, I thought, when the Lightning Lad mentions his sister.
Yes, that was very cool. The Levitz Museum line was a very nice nod. The only thing about it that was missing that I was really geeked about seeing and hoped to see that didn't happen was how in 247 it broke down that as Clark was progressively moving from his house to school or vice versa, he was running into one Legionnaire at a time, and they would call him Superboy or Kal-El, and I was kind of waiting for that moment. Instead, we had the sudden appearance of a Legion to come back, right, the Persuader, which was fine, but I'd kind of hoped to have him doing the confused walk through town. How does this person know I'm Kal-El? Why are they calling me Superboy? I don't understand.
Well, you notice that whenever Lightning Lad is getting ready to call him Superman, you know, so you also, you know, you'd be known as,
yeah, and stopped him. Yeah, Rock would stop him.
And before he could ever say the name.
I did think very much that the Legion members themselves tended to switch, depending on what the situation was, they would switch what they would call each other. Mm-hmm. At times they'd be very formal and call each other by their titles.
I don't think they ever called it that. The only person who got called by their hero name was Lightning Lad.
Was it?
Yeah, because everybody else is either Rock or Imra.
Imra.
And they call Garth, I mean, but whenever Rock was, you know, talking to, you know, Lightning, you know, say Lightning Lad, you know.
At one point, and I believe it's Lightning Lad who says it, not Imra, someone does call Rock Kaz.
Okay, I might have missed them, but yeah, I can see that.
So it was kind of cool that they would flip in and out of their hero names. I do have to say that, well, I thought that the jackets were a really cool fashion accessory. I'm very glad that we didn't get the nameplate across the chest of each character. I didn't notice or not whether there was a patch
on Kaz's
shoulder.
I don't think there was, but, you know, they kind of smallvilling up the costumes.
The Brainiac 5 mention at the end was very excellent as well. I'm sure we can do something to make Brainiac more agreeable in the future or something to that effect, which I thought was great.
You know, it's like, okay, so you know, they probably talk about the character who's already there, so I'm thinking this Brainiac here is going to be Computo.
Oh.
I just might go, you know, because, I mean, I saw the ball, and if you look in the Bastion issues, their little Computo, helper,
mm-hmm,
you know, is doing that.
Yep.
All right, well, you know, nice talking with you.
It was nice talking with you, Ray.
And hopefully we'll get back together again real soon and do some more.
All righty.
All right, thank you.
Take care.
Back to you guys.
So on to the Legion goodness.
Ah, absolutely. And this, we have a story here.
Yes, we do.
Oh, my. The Legion of Super Monsters.
Monsters, scary, you say.
Huh, kids? Mm. Yes.
I'm scared. No, not monsters.
And, of course, this one comes to us from Adventure 309, I believe. Where is it?
I think so. 309 or 308. One of the two.
309. And mm-hmm, this is, of course, written by Edmund Hamilton and art by John Forte. So I actually switched over to my archive so that I can see it in color. Because I thought to myself, we've got to be into that second archive volume by now.
And, oh, yeah, yeah. We've been there.
Sure enough. Yeah, for a while. Exactly. Okay, so, so you know, on that first splash page, we have we have this guy in like an animal skin with he's wearing Jessica Simpson's belt, I notice.
Oh, and you had to go there.
Well, come on, look at it.
Leave the girl alone. She just wants a little ding dong once in a while. Come on.
Hey, anyway. I got no problem with her. The belt's a little bit of an issue, though.
Yeah.
You know, bad fashion is just bad fashion. See, I've been hanging out with you too long.
Yeah, see, phase one is complete.
Oh,
phase
my.
Two begins.
So he's got this, this four-colored... flag with different funny looking animals that look like something off some strange Bugs Bunny planet. And hey, see, that ties into our little reference at the beginning of the episode. I as soon as one of these things goes flibbity flabbity flubbity flubbity, then we're really in trouble. Okay, so featuring in this issue, have we been getting the roll call every issue?
We have not been getting roll calls.
Okay.
Hey, we've got a roll call.
Roll call. Brainiac 5, Bouncing Boy, Saturn Girl, Sun Boy, Chameleon Boy, Mon-El, Colossal Boy, and Ultra Boy.
Yep.
So there we go. So we start off the issue with one day in the 30th century.
Yay!
It's just the sun's shining just a little bit brighter right now. A famous science professor addresses his class of special students, the Legion of Superheroes. So basically what he's doing, I mean, and it sounds like they're doing some advanced math, because in today's lesson, they're going to learn how to figure the 10th order equations of the fourth dimension. So there's Mon-El and Ultra Boy taking notes, and it doesn't matter where they are. They get it on closed-circuit TV. So, for example, Ultra Boy and Mon-El far off in a spaceship, and they're sitting there taking notes. And he says, and remember that the equation of z over x times pi squared, the fourth dimension infinity constant, is, and we don't know.
We don't ever find out.
One day someone will come back and finish off that little plot thread. Anyway, on a faraway planet, you've got Cosmic Boy all grown to super size.
Oh, that's like, Colossal Boy.
Sorry.
You know, Cosmic Boy.
That's what I
Come
meant
on now.
To say. Colossal Boy. I'm like reading it too. And and he's got the this positively massive notepad. And there's a big old TV set up all there. And so what they've done is like...
On the
like,
side of a mountain. Isn't that convenient?
I know. You know, it's like, okay, I'll watch over your city. Let me just bring my TV.
Yes, if you can't tell, this story's a little on the quirky side. We'll just leave it at that.
Oh, yeah. So. He says, of course, this equation must be altered in the Rock's Earl galaxy. Of course. I mean,
of course
hello.
It must be. We don't know why, but of course. Of course.
So he says, on Earth, those superheroes who are not away on missions attend their class in the Legionnaires' Clubhouse, but still on TV. And he says, and that concludes today's lecture. And they're like, wow, that was tough. Now it's time to check where all the members are. So they go to the map of the universe.
and there's Saturn Girl acting like a weather girl in Brainiac yes. 5.
She says, and Shrinking Violet is still at the world Zolnar. Superboy, back in his own time, is engaged in an urgent task that happened 1,000 years ago.
Yep.
And so you look and you see, Matter Eater Lad over here. You got Shrinking Violet up there, Cosmic Boy, and Ultra Boy Mon-El, and there's Invisible Kid over on this other planet. He says, okay. Brainiac 5 is like, yeah, all Legion members accounted for. Next order
Not
of business.
Really.
Oh.
There's no Phantom Girl accounted for anywhere in this issue. So, where is she?
Apparently they knew where she was. That's all
apparently, but she's not on the map of the universe. I guess she's out of the universe then.
Oh, well, because Big Soul.
Maybe
is...
she's on her home planet, Big Dizzle, which is not in our actual dimension.
So there you go. See, you would win a no prize if it was Marvel and it was the 70s. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so the screening of applicants proceeds. And of course, here's someone that we've seen, Rainbow Girl.
Rainbow Girl, she's fabulous, isn't she?
Oh man, she could have been on last episode too. They say, sorry, we can't accept you, Rainbow Girl, but you get the anti-gravity flying belt we give all rejected applicants. And then he says, next, hey, you can't bring that dangerous boar lad in here. And this guy is Jungle King. I mean, what kind of name is that? There's no lad or lass or boy.
Well, okay, in Jungle King's defense, it does beat Bwana Beast, okay?
Yeah, not by much.
Not by much, but yeah, it does.
So the Borlat looks like it's a six-legged tiger, basically. And he says, you know, this Borlat and every other animal obeys my hypnomental commands. This power to control beasts was given to me by my father, Desnu, an expert animal trainer.
Basically, it's the land version of Aquaman. We get it.
Yeah. So basically, you know, you see his dad altering his brain patterns and giving him that fabulous belt so that goes well with his bracelets.
And, by the way, I've heard Aquaman is back, but, you know, we'll see. Anyway, go on.
Hey, they always need more Black Lanterns. We're going to get to milk that for a while. Anyway, he says, you know, you forgot to maintain control over that Borlat, as you talked, and it's charging you. But that's okay. Sunboy, he's all over it. He radiates a little heat and light and dazes him with radiance. Now the beast can't do any harm. So Saturn Girl's not impressed. So she's like, you know, we can't accept you. Basically, if you can't control the animals, you know, and that's supposed to be your power, then you're no good to us. You're a menace. And, so he's not pleased, you know, and he heads back to his flyer and he's pissed off. And some boy says, wow, he was raging when we rejected him. I'm afraid the rays his father used on him warped his mind a little. See, Dirk's always got the little observations.
Mm-hmm.
And so meanwhile, he's, you know, the mulleted Jungle King is thinking to himself, because come on, he's business up front and party in the back.
Party in the back, baby.
All right. And he says, they'll find out they made a big mistake rejecting me. So off he goes. He flies to the place that no legionnaire dares go to. Monster World. It sounds like a 30th century theme park.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
So off he goes. He says, men try.
Did you see buying a little stuffed Validus at the entrance gate? Anyway. I'm about to be in Orlando. Sorry, I've got Disney on the brain.
Look, with real mental lightning.
Ooh. That wears off 30 minutes after you leave the park. Anyway.
There you go. He says, so basically, men tried to colonize this world but had to abandon it because of the weird, dangerous monsters here. But with my powers, I can control them. So he lands and he sees this creature with a powerful, vibrating, rattling tail. And it seems to cause earthquakes with its tail. Like, it basically digs it into the ground and shakes away and causes an earthquake. Mm-hmm. So that's his first recruit. You know, and he's got to make sure that he keeps them all under control. So then he goes to the next creature. Basically what he does is he tries to lure all these other creatures with, you know, attractive scents, whirling lights, and decoy sounds. And he's decided that he's going to create a legion of super monsters.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets this little trio of monsters. And one of them, there's like a mirror beast, basically, a mirror monster. And it reminds me, like, remember the Herculoids?
Yeah, it reminds me of that. It also reminds me of the Apalaxians from JLA's origin.
Ugh.
The crystalline creature.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so he says, so basically he takes these ones under control. So you've got the super spinner beast that causes a tiny tornado. And then there's an eye monster that can shoot heat vision, X-rays, blinding light, and lightning from its multiple eyes.
Wow, that's impressive.
Seriously. Okay, so basically, you know, he's getting them. It's still more monsters show up. There's a gas creature that has a power to vaporize itself at will, but he's like, it's not useful enough. So I guess he's rejecting it.
Yeah.
Shouldn't he know better, being a reject himself?
Shoe other foot. Yeah.
Exactly. Hello, pot. This is the kettle. Mm-hmm. He says this drill beast can drill through anything. I'll accept it. And he sees this other beast flying toward the lures. And so basically he sees that it can retract its wings and put out legs to walk or fins and tails to swim. Why, it's an omni beast. And so it creates it. So he's like, yeah, this completes my legion of monsters. And he changes his name to Monster Master. I don't know if it's official name. Like, he doesn't fill out any paperwork. But he says,
I just think he just decided, like Prince, when he changed his name from Prince to that little symbol.
To the symbol for Boron, yeah.
Yeah.
So he says, basically, hey, I'm going to show the universe how powerless the superheroes are against us. And he's like, you know, if they interfere, we'll destroy them. That's what they get for rejecting me. So off to the Great Space Bank, which basically serves to exchange the strange monies of many worlds. So you got a guy in there with some Barakian living money, which we would see come back later, I believe, definitely in the 5 year later Legion. Of course, during the Tenzel story.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
He says, I want to exchange my Barakian living money for liquid money of the world Althar. And he says, yes, sir, but that will be 4 gallons of liquid money, do you?
So, you know what it actually reminds me of? There was this scene in Eye for an Eye where Starboy and Dreamgirl are on Ventura.
Yeah.
And she's betting and the chips are walking into the machine. Like, wasn't that cute? Anyway.
Exactly. Well, the living money, yeah, it would appear again. Okay, so basically you see the Omnibeast flying through space, and you see everyone like, hey, that strange beast outside can fly in space. And so naturally they see this,
imagine that.
They see this beast flying by and they say, look, it's incredible. Maybe it will try to break in.
I wonder how many flying beasts there are that fly through space unaided, because that's a constant thing popping up in the Legion.
Exactly.
I mean, Imisk has the space dragons.
Mm-hmm.
And that JLA, JSA, LSH, the first one, the old Bronze Age one, there was a space dragon thing that they had to fight off on some planet to get the green bell. So, you know, there's got to be – how many creatures like this are there? And why do we keep making more of them? Anyway. Yeah. And why are people shocked when they see them? Anyway.
anyway, so all these monsters break into the bank. And the drill beast basically gets through the airlock, and because everybody is distracted by the Omnibeast, and the mirror monster is reflecting the guns raised back at the science police, and of course the other beast is projecting heat and lightning out of its eyes. And Monster Master now wearing his space suit, you know, so committing much less of a fashion faux pas.
He's changed.
Yes, he says, you can't face my Monster Legion. We'll not take all of your money. I must hurry on to pick up the rarest jewels in the universe.
So off he goes.
So at Legion headquarters, you see a science police officer pull up, open his window, and say, hey, strange monsters led by a youth who calls himself Monster Master looted big sums from the space bank. So they're okay, we're on it. And so they get to the bank and they're talking to the guy, and he goes, I tell you, it's uncanny the way that youth could control those monsters. So some boy quickly surmises that it must be Jungle King. And he's like, from somewhere he's gathered strange creatures to obey him and starting to loot the riches of the universe. So they said, you know, well, he's going after the rarest jewels. So you know, some boy's like, well, Brainiac 5, you're our most brilliant scientist.
Yeah.
You know, I know that I've been like dropping the wisdom the last couple of issues, but you know. You can have a crack at it too. And it turns out Brainiac 5 is like, yeah, it's the Comet Jewels, but there's only a few of them on the Sky City on Planet Core, and no criminal has ever been able to raid Sky City. Well, they haven't come up against the Omnibeast, have they?
No, they have
not. So here we go, and the Sky City is built high because the smog on the Planet Core is deadly. And so basically, you know, it says, I'll send up my ultimatum by radio. Either they drop their Comet Jewels to me or I'll destroy Sky City. So they get the ultimatum from Monster Master, and they're like,
okay, now here's what I find funny. It is that the people who are answering this are crawling to the edge of Sky City. There's not a railing in sight. There's nothing to keep people from falling off that bloody city.
This seems like a bad idea.
It does, doesn't it?
That's just poor design. So yeah,
so are there some bodies down around in a circle shape down below?
They got people falling every day. Like every day on the news, it's like another 12 people fell.
Oh, jeez.
So he says, what a ridiculous bluff. One man with a few strange beasts threatening to destroy mighty Sky City. And they're just, the whole thing's laughable to them. So the earthquake beast starts causing a quake, and it starts shaking the city, and they're getting kind of scared. You got to figure, they got to be, you know, somehow these guys don't fall off. And he says, you know, that weird beast is causing quakes that are rocking the whole city. We'll be toppled over. And then the Legion comes flying in, and some boy, of course, zaps the mirror beast. Because, you know, why is it that everybody goes to zap the mirror beast first?
I mean, it's shiny.
A little, yeah, apparently. A little to the right, and he could be getting the quake beast, you know, the one that's causing the problems. And, of course, the Radiance turns back on them. And so Brainiac 5 is like, turn it off, son boy. And Bouncing Boy is a little worried about the eye monster that's shooting lightning at him from one of its eyes. Fortunately, he has the power of super bouncing. That's the only thing that saved him.
Mm-hmm.
So we see the city starting to topple over, and they're like, yeah, give him the comet jewels. Just, you know, drop him. So they start chucking down the comet jewels. And you look at that angle that they're on, and still they hang on. So Brainiac 5 is like, yeah, we got to save Sky City, even if he does get the jewels. And so basically they go off to the ship and get a long cable, and they manage to tow the city back into position. But alas, the comet jewels have been taken by Monster Master.
Yes, they have, and he got away scot-free. Or did he?
They said, we barely prevented the Sky City's doom, and we failed to prevent the theft of its greatest treasure. For the first time in our history, our Legion has met defeat. And Saturn Girl says, this is now a feud between us and Monster Master. We must have a showdown in which either the Legion of Superheroes or the Legion of Monsters will win. That's right, Saturn Girl. One team will win. The other will almost certainly lose. So we get into part two, the Legion Super Showdown. Why don't you take this part? Why don't you take part two? We'll split it up.
I'll take part two. We see a blue figure flying towards the Earthquake Beast's tail, thinking, I drew the marked lot, and it's up to me to conquer the Earthquake Beast somehow or die trying. Oh, no, another Legionnaire is going to die? Oh, say it isn't so.
And does death mean nothing in the DC Universe?
Death means nothing in the DC Universe.
Unless you want to be a Black Lantern.
So we see down here, we've got a little bit of a recap here. Saturn Girl is honing in on Monster Master's thoughts, and he's going to loot flowers next. And I guess Brainiac 5 says, good work. He must be headed for the world of giant flowers, whose precious seeds are worth a fortune. And that's where we'll go. and they're like, it's not going to be easy to stop him. Some boy's like, I've got a plan. And so they get to Alice in Wonderland. I mean, the planet where all the flowers are huge. And this is Inshar, the world of giant flowers. due to its unusual soil, these giant blooms evolved here. Their seeds are hoarded by people here like valuable treasure. They be rich loot for Monster Master. I keep wanting to say Monster Manual because I was working on some Dungeons & Dragons stuff earlier today. And I find myself having to struggle to stop saying that. So they activate their flight belts and they get down to the planet. And Bouncing Boy's like, take me with you. And Brainy's like, sorry, Bouncing Boy, but someone must stay in the ship with Saturn Girl to answer if we call by portable radio. And Chameleon Boy must go with us. He's the key of our whole plan. So they leave Chuck alone with the telepath, which is kind of, you know, I guess maybe where they got it for the animated series that they would always leave Bouncing Boy behind.
Yeah, yeah.
And Brainiac 5 says, I hated to leave him behind, but his power of super bouncing wouldn't help much in a struggle like this. Somebody says, I agree. He's jolly and we like him, but bouncing won't conquer those mighty monsters. Well, look who's full of themselves.
Seriously.
Legion of Super Arrogance. Hello. So they come across the Monster Master's ship, and here come the monsters, and they're stunning one of the monsters and trapping it so Cam can pull the switcheroo. And now he is the drill monster, and Cam infiltrates the Legion. Meanwhile, Bouncing Boy is just darn tired of all the suspense. And so he's going to go have a look at what the others are doing. Saturn Girl can handle the ship's radio by herself. And I agree. Saturn Girl is completely capable of handling a radio by herself. And Bouncing Boy says, oops, I carelessly bounced from a rubbery elastic bush, and it's bouncing me twice as high as I intended. And sure enough, Monster Master sees him. Big Chuck. Blue dot in the sky. Oh, that's Bouncing Boy, and that means the superheroes have followed me here. I'd better forget the seeds and retreat with my legion, for the superheroes may have some new weapon to use against me. Back to the ship, hurry! And all the beasts are obeying a Monster Master's commands. And Cam's like, this upsets our plan, for Sun Boy and Brainiac 5 aren't back yet from chaining the real Drill Beast. I'll have to keep impersonating a monster and go with them. And Bouncing Boy is like copping to the fact, oh, I screwed up the plan, I'm sorry. He saw me, and Brainiac's like, you've ruined everything. But Chameleon Boy is a spy in the Monster Legion. We had a chance for a surprise mop-up, but you spoiled it. Oh. Brainy got into a little bit of a snit, didn't he?
And it's funny, and so because, you know, later on, that would, of course, become basically, you know, Brainy's standard
response to everybody. Yeah. You've ruined everything. Supposed to be the best Christmas ever. Some boy catches up Saturn Girl, and Saturn Girl's like, they're too far for me to track. I hope Chameleon Boy is clever enough to protect himself. Well, you know. Here's Cam, is in the worst predicament of his life. Not technically. There's something else Cam's done that's worse than this, I think.
Oh, yes.
Cam says, these monsters are terrible, especially Earthquake Beast. I don't see how anybody will ever handle that creature. I can't keep up this imposture forever. And if Monster Master finds out, dun-dun-dun. And so Monster Master becomes obsessed with a sudden fear. And the superheroes seem determined to run me down. I'll hide my ship in one of those caves at the rocky planet until they've given up the search. So basically, he's going to his super secret hideout. And Chameleon Boy has changed back to his familiar Cam form and is trying to get a signal on the two-way radio there that looks so advanced. Mm. Once again, when they rely on the technology.
Exactly.
And then Monster Master hears the radio turn on. He's like, that's Chameleon Boy, one of the superheroes. He must have been impersonating the Driller. Get him! And so Cam is running for his life from the Omni Beast, and he's got a ray gun with him. I didn't know they issued those standard, but I guess they did.
There you go.
And he basically pulls a double on, and he's pulling into a double of the Omni Beast, and maybe to distract the Omni Beast or just to lure it for a good shag in the cave. Who knows?
Dirty boy, that Chameleon Boy.
He's a dirty, dirty boy. Dirty boy. Send your comments, too. So Monster Master is back at the ship, and he's trying to get everybody back in the ship so he can get out of here. And Brainy, Sun Boy, and Bouncing Boy have arrived. And Cam is glad to get out of here, but it looks like he's lost the Omni Beast. Yay. So it looks like Omni Beast is down two beasts now. And when the Omni Beast has been released, Great Jupiter's, it retracted its legs and released a pair of wings from its body, and it's heading toward space. And it can fly in space, too. Didn't we know that already?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and everyone, you know, everyone's watching the Omni Beast while people are breaking into stuff. And
don't you know? And the Omni Beast is landing on a planet, and the Legionnaires decide to follow the Omni Beast. And lo and behold, Monster Master is back in his, well, he's already been in his original form for a while, but he's rocking the belt again.
Can I just point something out here? It says he's heading toward Monster World. That dangerous planet must be where Monster Master has his base. You figure?
Well, they got Brainy with him. They should have figured that out.
Oh, my.
And some boy, Monster Master is looking at a weird gas creature that can turn itself into pure vapor. Seems to want to join me, but I won't have it, for it has no great powers. And he dismisses the beast. Get away from me.
Yes.
And Sun Boy, back on the ship, says, we left the Earthquake Beast on guard to stop us. He left the Earthquake Beast on guard to stop us, sorry. We daren't land the ship openly. Daren't. Ooh.
Sun Boy's all about the grammar.
Isn't he, though?
Oh, yeah.
Or the creature will destroy it. I propose that one of us go in alone in secret to get Monster Master. Brainy says, we'll draw lots for the job, excluding Saturn Girl, because it's too risky a mission for a girl. Oh, my God.
I tell you, years later, Violet would take serious issue with something like that.
You think?
Damn.
That was just like right out there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Go women's lib, anyway. So Bouncing Boy draws the mark, and of course everyone's like, we're doomed. Oh, no.
Like, oh, great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, yeah. Maybe, not only let's take out the one who's a chick, and also the guy whose power is super bouncing.
Yeah. So Chuck apparently is the blue form that we saw gliding down to this planet. And so he bounces, and he's like, come on, Earthquake Beast, lash at me with your tail. And the next moment, he reacted just as I thought he would. His tail missed my bouncing body and cracked this cliff wall wide open. He'll be covered with rocks. And Monster Master returns to the scene, having felt the distant battle of vibrations. That ridiculous bouncing boy, he's beaten my Earthquake Beast. Suddenly, that weird gas creature is grabbing me. It's angry because I wouldn't let it join my monster legion. It's changing to gas, and it's holding me. It's changing me to vapor, too. I never knew it had this power to vaporize anything.
Exactly.
Well, that's what you get for rejecting a monster. Huh?
You reap what you sow, sir.
Later, when the other superheroes land, and that was the end of Monster Master. It's ironical.
Ironical.
Strategery, ladies and gentlemen, strategery. A rejected monster destroyed him just as he tried to destroy us because we rejected him.
That is ironical.
It is ironical. I'm going to use that word tomorrow 5 times in meetings.
Oh, my.
The monsters he commanded have gone back to their natural life. Let's hope they stay there and that no one ever forms another legion of super monsters.
Oh, there's a plot thread right there.
There's a plot thread dangling.
Oh, yes. So there we go. That's the Legion of Super Monsters.
Of Super Monsters.
Scary, huh, kids?
Very scary. We should have saved it for a Halloween episode. It was so scary.
There you go. Super Monsters. Yeah. They weren't all winners. They weren't.
But that's okay.
It was okay.
It was a nice little morality tale told in the form of a comic book.
Okay. Absolutely. And this, you know, that ties
comics
into...
Comics code authority. Comics code authority.
Exactly.
Code
authority. Well, this is stuff we've talked about before, that whole idea that that there was sort of a character education side to things. And, So there you go.
And Chuck actually does fight an Earthquake Beast again later on.
Oh, yes.
So the Earthquake Beast is actually his, you know, his big baddie. I know, isn't that sad?
A little bit. We're going to start, really, I think this could be, no, John Forte sticks around for just a little bit longer. A few more issues, and then we start getting into the Kurt Swan era. And I got to say, I'm really looking, you can see a difference in Forte's art from previous issues through to this one. And there's been, you know, there's a bit more character to the characters. You know, there's just, it doesn't seem as stiff as it did in sort of some of the early issues. But I just love that Kurt Swan stuff. I can't wait.
It's coming.
It's coming soon. I mean, it's just beautiful stuff.
And you can tell the difference, obviously.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we talked about this one back with the first appearance of the Legion of Supervillains. You know, when you had that Swan art there, and while it doesn't seem to have the kind of depth that did, and maybe that's down to who was inking him, it's still there's something about his representation of the Legionnaires that just really always worked for me. And you know, despite growing up with all the Garcia Lopez licensing stuff, you know, Kurt Swan Superman is still my Superman. Yeah, you know, that's who I when I think of Superman, I think of him as drawn by Kurt Swan.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, so there you have it. So yeah, looking forward to that kind of stuff. Anyway, you're off to MegaCon in just a week.
Yes, I am.
So
woohoo!
It's a beautiful thing.
It's going to be great. I'll hopefully have a wrap up for you. You won't hear it immediately after MegaCon, but it'll be after that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that'd be great, because and certainly when you get your Sensor Girl sketch, we'll need to see that up on the forum, which is at forum.legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com.
Segway lad strikes again.
There you go. Where you can join in on the conversation. Let us know what you thought about the Legion of Super Monsters, and if you could think of a monster that should be in such a legion, who would it be? Just gives us more stuff to read and listener feedback, and I always love that.
That's true, it does.
So, and because I think there's going to be some wacky ideas out there. So, comments as always are welcome at legionofsubstitutepodcasters@gmail.com. Again, the forum, forum.legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com. And head on over to our website, legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com. When we post the episodes up there, you can leave comments there. And there's always a lot of great stuff. And, Lexarius, as I said, is a frequent poster over on the episode pages. And we'd love to read stuff over there, too, because, there's a lot of... A lot of things that really sort of shed light on different things that you may not find on the forum as well. So, all sorts of places where you can read some feedback and get some other ideas of what's going on in the world of the Legion. Meanwhile, we are going to head into the time bubble because we need to get back before Darren has to fly off to Florida. Because if he flies indeed from here in the 30th century, who knows what he will see? It will be a very, very different convention.
It will be.
When you get to that one in the 30th century, Legion of Three Worlds number 5 will be shipping. And
oh, dear God. The internet will crack open again. No.
As will the next issue of All-Star Batman and Robin.
We need to do a contest. Okay. I want everyone out there to guess how long the next Legion of Three Worlds episode will be.
Oh. Closest without getting over wins a prize. We don't know what the prize is yet, but we'll
price
get a prize.
Price is right rules. Totally.
Yeah.
Closest absolutely to it without going over wins.
It's a beautiful thing. All right. Into that time bubble we go. And have a great week.
Yep. Woohoo.